Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Thank you for everyone to come in tonight to Freedom Fighters for America Radio. We have with us tonight, we're very honored to have Mr. Rodney Stitch. He's an author of 16 books, an ex-Navy pilot and instructor from World War II, a former airline captain, federal aviation inspector, investigator. He's been on 3,000 radio and TV shows since 1978. He's written over 16 books, and we're very happy to have you here tonight, Mr. Stitch. Could you please give us some of your background pertaining to the books that you've written, sir?
Surely. I started becoming a activist, you might call it, or let me put it this way. I started learning about the corruption that is quite endemic in government after I became a government agent, and especially after I was given the assignment to correct the conditions that, at that time, were responsible for the worst series of airline disasters in the nation's history. Well, what I found there is it really woke me up, because as a regular citizen, I had no idea what this was going on. So anyhow, in trying to fight these problems, I simply ran into more problems. And so I left government and I started publishing books and on what I had found, and also appearing on radio and television shows. And over a period of years, dozens of other insiders, I'm talking about agents of the FBI, the CIA, the DEA, former drug traffickers, former mafia figures, they've been providing me with information and documentation. And this is over the last 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So the books, I've written books on these. Now, these are factual. There's no conspiracy theories involved. And they're written by a professional with the input of many other professionals. So there's no funny business in the books. And they're very factual. And they provide the means for any group that really wants to do something about the corruption rather than just talk about it. Mm-hmm. The books provide the means by which something can be done. And one of the latest books is one that I wrote about the FBI, the involvement of murders by FBI agents, a mafia figure acting as a mole inside an Al-Qaeda cell that was providing advance notice of several of our major terrorist attacks, things like that. Mm-hmm. So, and anybody can get more information by going to the website, which is defraudingamerica.com. So that's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that you have a few books here. One book I'd like to ask you about in particular was Crimes of the FBI and DOJ and Mafia. Could you please tell us a little bit more about that book as far as the connections that you've made between the Department of Justice and the Mafia?
Right. And that book is probably one of the best books with more hard information in, and some very tragic consequences due to DOJ corruption. So here it is. What the book is about, I start out with murders perpetrated by FBI agents in the Boston office. Now, this isn't just me blabbering, making allegations. These are the facts, documentation, showing how the murders were perpetrated and how a couple of the FBI agents were then sent to prison. Okay, then some years, I'd say about 8 years ago, I started getting information from two sources about murders perpetrated by a key FBI supervisor in the New York office. Now, these murders were perpetrated along with a mafia capo who was referred to as the killing machine. So obviously this is outside of the outside of the normal area of corruption. Well, over the years, I'm now this here mafia guy, he also worked as a mole inside an Al-Qaeda cell headed by Ramzi Youssef. Now, Youssef was the mastermind behind the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, and he was also the mastermind behind the planned bombing of 11 U.S. airliners departing the Far East. Anyhow, Youssef ended up in a federal holding cell in New York. And my mafia friend was also in that holding cell. So my mafia friend started convincing this Al-Qaeda soldier that he and his mafia group was also interested in harming the United States. So Ramzi Youssef is providing him over several months detailed information on planned terrorist attacks. Now, these are terrorist attacks that actually occurred. Well, now, what the mafia guy was doing through his attorney, he was passing information law over to the FBI. And FBI agents at the local level considered the information extremely valuable and the mafia fellow very creditable. However, higher FBI DOJ officials did not want any credibility given to that mafia guy because he was scheduled to give testimony at several murder trials at which the mafia guy would be testifying about murders perpetrated not only by his father, who was known as the killing machine, but that also involved this FBI supervisor.
So you're talking about Gregory Scarpa Sr. and Gregory Scarpa Jr.? Those are the two individuals you speak of when you mention that?
Yes, absolutely. Scarpa and I have been in intensive discussions for the last, since 2001. So now also feeding me information was an FBI agent, a highly decorated Vietnam War pilot and highly decorated hero. He worked under this FBI supervisor, which is Lindley DeVicchio. And incidentally, that FBI agent's name is Richard Tuss. I also have a book written just about him. But nevertheless, Tuss is also finding out that his supervisor is involved in cover-ups and other crimes. Also, Tuss was discovering secret funding and arming of Iraq during the 1980s by a CIA operation in the New York area. Well, his bosses at the FBI, including DeVicchio, told him, knock it off, don't report it. So Tosh then reports it to members of Congress. And all Congress did, they passed the information along to the Department of Justice, who then filed a sham a criminal charge against this FBI agent based upon the alleged misuse of a gasoline credit card 4 years earlier. Well, then also they apparently got the Nassau County District Attorney to file criminal charges against Tosh. And so Tosh now is in state prison at Dannemora, New York, with a 50-year prison sentence. But let me go into the more important stuff now. What happened after, the advance information on the terrorist attacks were made just before TWA Flight 800 went down, shortly before the bombings of U.S. embassies in Africa, and of course also gave advance warnings of the hijackings of U.S. airliners. Now, all of these happened, all of these events. Now, it's very possible that if the FBI FBI officials had not blocked the information from being known that was obtained from an Al-Qaeda cell. And this is the most important insider we possibly could have had in an Al-Qaeda cell. And here he was being discredited. So, of course, there was no actions, no measures taken to prevent these terrorist attacks. So the initial immediate results is about 4,000 people were killed. Well, now, what I did, now, first of all, in 2003, when I was getting all this information, the House Judiciary Committee was conducting hearings on the murders perpetrated by two FBI agents in the Boston office. So I contacted every one of them by letter. And I notified them that I was a former federal agent, that I had two inside sources that had information about murders perpetrated by a FBI supervisor in the New York office, and also made reference to the related terrorist attacks. Would you believe it? Not a single member of the House Judiciary Committee, I think there was about 24 members, not a single one responded. So anyhow, if you go to my website, you'll see on January the 10th, first I sent a letter to New York Governor David Patterson. And the reason I sent him a letter was that this FBI agent, Richard Tosh, has a petition in for commutation of his sentence. He's already been in prison, I think it's 18 years, and he'll die in prison, more or less to keep him quiet. So anyhow, I did that, and I put the details in there, and there's a lot more details than I'm telling you now about how he was railroaded and what have you. Then I also, on January the 20th, I sent a fax to about 50 different senators and House members, making them aware of the not only the murders in the FBI, DOJ, but also how it affected the terrorist attacks, how the people that, of course, that were killed were more or less sacrificed so as to protect high FBI, DOJ personnel. So that's basically what it is. And there's a lot more details there. But now, this is heavy stuff.
It sure is. I'm curious to know what kind of repercussions you've been having in exposing these crimes.
Well, the initial... Initially, they really came after me. You know, I was a multimillionaire. I had about $10 million in real estate assets. And like an idiot, instead of forgetting it, Because nobody listens. Anyhow, look, I've been on 3,000 radio and TV shows since 1978. More people have known about it. I've got a lot of credibility. No one will do anything. And, of course, the way it is now, most people don't even read anymore. They're too busy looking at their videos or something else. I guess it's an extension of the pacifiers when they were babies. But at any rate, the government came after me they got a CIA front law firm in San Francisco, and they filed some bizarre charges against me, and they eventually stripped me of everything I had, and this was all done very corruptly. I was during all this time. Oh, incidentally, during all this time, I'm making federal judges aware of these things. I'm doing it under the federal crime reporting statute. That's Title 18, USC Section 4. And what that section says is that anyone who knows of a federal crime must report it to a federal judge or the federal officer. Well, no one ever reports it to a federal judge. But right. Since the Department of Justice was covering up and was part of all this, I circumvented them and went to file federal actions. And then they came after me, and there's a lot more to this that I'm saying here, but eventually they not only stripped me of my assets, but they issued orders for ever barring me from filing any papers in the federal courts. Well, that's about as illegal and unconstitutional as you can get. And also, that blocks me from reporting the federal crimes that I was constantly getting more information about, let's say, like the drug smuggling by the CIA and many other covert activities. So one like October Surprise, I'm talking to the people who were part of it. So anyhow, as I'm finding these things out, I try to report it to a federal judge. Finally, there's about six orders by six different federal judges now that for the rest of my life bars me from filing any actions in federal court. So in a way, I'm a man without a country insofar as laws are concerned. As I'm finding out more, I file an action, so they charge me with criminal contempt of court. Mind you, some of the stuff I was trying to expose was the corruption in the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, that eventually led to the successful hijackings of four airlines. So it's kind of interesting. 3,000 people got killed, and here's one of the guys, an insider in the FAA, trying to correct the problems that led to many other crashes and would enable 9/11 to occur. So I end up in the pokey for 6 months, and including about 6 weeks in solitary confinement. Try that when you're 67 years of age.
That's out of contempt of court charges that they put you in there for that length of time?
That's right. Well, the U.S. attorney tried to get me in for 18 months. Now, that U.S. attorney in Sacramento, David Levi, they promoted him, as they did a number of other people that were part of this. Now he's a federal judge. Well, this is the way we keep the system, keep this crud under control. Those who help to cover up, we promote them into key positions.
Right.
So here, of course, I went through hell. You have no idea.
Can you give advice to anyone who's going through that same type of thing right now, that's being prosecuted for crimes that they haven't done? Was there anything that you did in particular that helped you, more than any other type of action that you could take while you were locked down in that type of scenario?
Well,
what do you think would work?
Let me mention what I did. Now, I studied the law very carefully. So I filed numerous federal actions. And now these are very professional. There's no screwball wild filings. These are very professional. And lawyers have even told me that. But I went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court several times. And if you go to my website or if you look at a couple of my books, you'll see the filings that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, to where the Supreme Court justices were made aware of what was going on. So they're implicated, not the general public. They would never believe this. Now, one of the things I did, let's talk about 9/11 a minute. Shortly before 9/11, I filed a federal action in the federal courts in Reno, Nevada, and I'm reporting the corruption in the FAA that's been responsible for a series of airline disasters, some of which incidentally occurred in my area of immediate federal air safety responsibilities. I'm also reporting in details the corruption in the FBI and the CIA. Now, these are the two agencies that also played a role in 9/11, though the main culprit were the people in the FAA. But anyhow, I was blocked from filing them. So after 9/11 occurred, I filed a federal action in New York in the federal courts. And for 12 months, U.S. District Judge Michael McCassey blocked the action from being filed. And, of course, he has to file it. Well, of course, what they have to do is something else again. So, finally, I had to write a letter to every member of the U.S. Supreme Court advising them of the latest obstruction of justice by a federal judge, and that was McCassey. And, of course, the Supreme Court justices are already aware of this. So anyhow, McCassey finally files my action 13 months late, and then he immediately dismisses it without a hearing. Well, I'm trying to report federal crimes for one thing, and a federal judge has an administrative duty, not a judicial duty. They must, under their administrative responsibility, receive the information, and that's provided by that federal criminal statute, 18 U.S.C. Section 4. So here we got McCassey obstructing justice, and then I appealed it, and I was in New York giving oral arguments before the Court of Appeals. This was, I forget what year, it wasn't about 2004. So there's a lot of people involved here. Now, and again, I can't emphasize enough. This is heavy stuff. This isn't any wild, vague conspiracy theories or anything like that. This is hardcore corruption associated with some extremely deadly consequences. But this is only the latest, because I've been documenting this for the last 40 years, the consequences. Mm-hmm. So that's basically the highlights of some of the crud I've been running into.
Mm-hmm. I see. So basically what's going on here is there seems to be the follow the dots here. Is that correct? You followed a lot of dots pertaining to, you know, this these activities that go on. You see people that are tied in to the mob. You see people tied in to the Department of Justice and other agencies. Is there any common denominator? Do you find any common denominator here in any of this?
Well, let's see. Several common denominators I found. I'm not sure this is exactly what you mean, but one, the corruption is endemic. There hasn't been a federal agency, and I've been in the material I've come up with has involved numerous federal agencies, and the cover-ups are endemic. And of course, federal judges are heavily involved in a corrupt manner, you might say criminal manner, because when you're obstructing justice, and then when you retaliate against a former federal agent for trying to report criminal activities that have had a long list of, like in the aviation area, long list of very deadly air disasters. Matter of fact, one of the first air disasters I was involved in, it happened in New York in 1960. It was a United Airlines DC-8 that crashed into Brooklyn. It was the world's worst air disaster at that time. And that and several other crashes is what caused the FAA to give me the assignment to clean up the crud.
Right.
But then over a period of years, I'm also finding out about the various CIA activities, the how they were looting the savings and loans,
mm-hmm.
and HUD, the drug smuggling, some of the covert operations that they were involved in, and of course the drug smuggling. And again, with the drug smuggling, I'm talking to the people who flew the drugs, and they were
right.
flying. They would land at military bases, so military knew the drugs were being smuggled. They'd land at DEA facilities, and I'm even talking to a former DEA agent who was a flight instructor at an airport just north of Dallas,
mm-hmm.
and he over a period of many months gave me the details about the drug smuggling
right.
that was going on. So, I mean, you can't get any closer than the people flying the drugs.
Right. Now, what time period was this occurring? I mean,
well, the drug smuggling was during the 1980s. So that's during the Reagan-Bush administration and the Iran-Contra affair.
I see.
And, of
uh-huh.
course, in the Iran-Contra affair, I'm talking to people who were part of it. I'm talking to people who were directly involved in the October surprise. And if you recall, that's the scheme that whereby people associated with Ronald Reagan, who was seeking the election, they were providing military equipment that was stolen from National Guard armories and providing money to Iranians to delay the release of the hostages till after the election, which
mm-hmm.
of course occurred. So the two main sources I have for that, they were giving me the over a period of many months where the meetings were held, some of the people who were there. One was held at a PepsiCo plant in, I think it was Barcelona. So this is the type of stuff. And, you know, even if people don't care, even if they're too lazy to do anything, it's a lot more interesting than fiction, believe me.
Absolutely. Now, you worked as an investigator and a federal aviation safety inspector.
Yeah.
So you've actually arrived at scenes of a plane crash. Is that correct?
Well, yes, but while the official responsibility for airline crash investigations is with the National Transportation Safety Board,
mm-hmm.
our job, we see the crashes before they happen because we see the safety problems.
I see.
And I made many, many reports. I even made a report on how to prevent hijackings. And it was so easy to prevent the hijackings of those airliners. And one of the things I had recommended, and I think this is probably the one thing that allowed the hijackings to occur, there was a practice of where the flight attendants had the key to the cockpit door. Well, almost any male can overpower a female flight attendant and take the keys. And all the evidence I see is that the pilots were suddenly confronted with the hijackers in the cockpit. They didn't break the door down. First of all, the doors don't break down that easily. And if anybody's trying to break down the door, it's intuitively obvious for the pilots to just put the plane in a little bit of an unusual attitude, and anybody trying to break down the door will be standing on their head or something else. So
mm-hmm.
this here one step could have been accomplished overnight throughout the United States if we had competent people in the FAA, and the FAA was getting almost daily warnings of planned terrorist attacks. Well, now, part of this is just stupidity, because the standard culture in government is to put politically correct or politically connected people in key positions. But my portion of the corruption in the FAA was hardcore corruption. Things were so bad, And I had to do something. I mean, people were dying. Now, today you have very few airline crashes, but in those days you were having a major air disaster about every 3 months, and some of them were occurring in my area of responsibility. So it got so bad, I finally used the law in such a way that I acted similar to a special prosecutor. And I conducted a hearing just like it would be in a court of law. And this is before administrative law judge. And it took about 3,500 pages of transcripts to take care of the testimony. And I'm bringing in, requiring officials to come in. I'm questioning them on the stand. During the hearing, there were three more major air disasters occurred, each one caused by the problems in which I had made numerous reports. And these were fatal crashes, mind you. So, and of course, after the hearing, there was a cover-up. And so while I was still in the FAA, I went to a federal grand jury in Denver. This is where I learned how the U.S. attorney can stop anybody, any prosecution that they don't want to proceed. And I was blocked there. And I even sent a letter to J. Edgar Hoover accusing him of criminal cover-up. And this is why I'm a federal inspector. And you don't get away with this unless you got some pretty heavy information. But all of this, I mean, I notified members of Congress, and they sympathized and says, yes, this is serious, but it's not in our area of responsibility. Well,
right.
Tell that to some of the next of kin that are going to the funerals of some of these fraud-related crashes. And
I'm very curious to know about one in particular. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. About Flight 800 off of Islip, Long Island. That one seems to have caused a lot of controversy throughout the years. I know personally myself, I lived on Long Island at the time of that crash. There were many people who said that they saw something, a green projectile, leave the ground area or from the water and actually strike the plane. What's your take on that?
Well, I write very extensively on that. I have a whole chapter on TWA Flight 800. Now, the information I have, and this is factual information now, as you say, many people saw the missile going up. Now, one of my key sources was a military pilot who had seen missiles in Vietnam. He was in a helicopter that night, doing takeoffs and landings, and during one of his approaches, he sees the missile going up. He sees the explosion, and as he said, the first explosion was not a gasoline explosion. It was a military explosion, which is a different color than the gasoline explosion, and then that was followed by the gasoline explosion. And now people don't realize that the National Transportation Safety Board will cover up. Matter of fact, I filed lawsuits against the National Transportation Safety Board concerning their cover-ups and falsification of training records. But at any rate, TWA Flight 800, I'm convinced, was a terrorist act. Now, incidentally, it was shortly before, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks before then, that Ramzi Youssef told this mole, which is the mafia guy, that there shortly would be a terrorist attack. He didn't use the word terrorist. There would shortly be a downing of a major airliner. Now, remember, he's in New York, this Ramzi Youssef. He has telephone communication with Al-Qaeda people on the outside. And that brings up another something else. This mafia guy tells Ramzi Youssef, "Look, we have a corporation out here in New York City. You can make a local phone call to them, and they will relay. They'll connect you to anyone you wanted." So here we have this Ramzi Youssef making phone calls to Al-Qaeda cells, personnel in the New York, New Jersey area. One call was to Texas, and then a number of calls were to Middle East locations. And, of course, this here so-called corporation was actually being manned by FBI agents. So they knew all of this that was going, everything that was being said, and they didn't act on it. So it's quite a story, and I don't think there's any book I have that has the capability of causing public outrage and to do something about the endemic corruption and the endemic cover-ups by members of Congress and much of the media. But we got to get the people to get off their rear end. And after 40 years, you know, I did all this initially because I was hoping to correct this crud. Mm-hmm. I've given up on that now. So I'm doing it now more or less to make a record of how this crap is going on. And the public, who I guess many of them feel they're relying on their leaders, and their leaders are so corrupt, you can't do that. And they're so involved, they will never address these matters because they would implicate themselves. So whether the public likes it or not, and I realize people are busy working and all, but if they have enough time to play with their damn video games and the sports and all, they ought to spend a little time on this. Look what's happening now. We got the greatest financial debacle since the Great Depression. I grew up in the Great Depression in New Jersey, and it was rough, and it's going to be a lot rougher. And here all the people, including the members of Congress who helped make it possible, no one's been addressed. And so I look at the public as kind of a feeding trough. If they want to remain dumb like that, well, so be it. And they're being just picked on, and they don't even know that they're being taken for fools.
Well, I would imagine that throughout all of, you know, all of your book writing and the people that you have spoken to, members of, you know, these agencies and other outside persons of organized crime and what have you, is that you must have collected quite a bit of evidence throughout the years regarding all of this. That's quite obvious. And so is Mr. Taos, and so are some of the other people. I was just wondering that, you know, if Judgment Day ever does come, you know, and there really is some sort of domino effect, if someone is out there that literally, personally, I believe that there'll have to be another agency to really be put into place to investigate all of this corruption or any part of this, otherwise they'll be tainted. It reminds me of the days of Elliot Ness and the Untouchables when they literally had to protect the judges, they had to protect the enforcement people, they had to protect the prosecutors because everyone was being corrupted, threatened, murdered, or what have you. Do you think this is the type of situation that is going to be necessary in order to get any of this this criminal activity eradicated?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, let's take judges, for instance. It was California judges that got involved with the CIA law firm to try and silence me. Well, there are so many major violations of state and federal laws to where it invoked a federal court jurisdiction. So I went to federal court, and the first judge then covered up for what was going on. So now each subsequent judge then decided to protect the prior judge, and now we've got all of the Supreme Court justices involved because, you know, when you report on the federal crime reporting statute to a federal judge these criminal acts, they've got to receive your data. Well, that includes the Supreme Court justices. But there's so many federal judges now involved, at, I'm sure it's quite a bit more than a dozen, that now, so you can count on the federal judges. Then you've got the Department of Justice, and I've got so much information on the CRUD there, which I started documenting while I was still in the federal government. And then you've got the members of Congress. I've got letters putting them on notice for the last 40 years. And this is not me making vague allegations. I'm telling them specific corrupt and criminal acts that are in their area of responsibility, and which also they have a responsibility under the federal crime reporting statute. That's that 18 U.S.C. Section 4, because if anybody makes the report to any federal officer, including members of Congress, they've got to receive it. Well, they've been blocking this, and there's been consequence after consequence. And I remember years ago when they were first doing this, I said, you know, you cover up for this, it's going to get worse and worse. And that's exactly what happened. Then you got the media. Most media people have been made aware of these things, not only by me. You've got agents, you've got drug smugglers that have been bringing this information to members of Congress and media people, and they keep the lid on it. And those few media people who did speak out, as soon as they do, the rest of the system goes after them. So mm-hmm. you can't get the media. So who do you have? Well, the only people left is the public. And based upon the facts that I've accumulated, they won't do a damn thing.
I see. So, in other words, we're at the you're doing the same thing that Freedom Fighters for America is trying to do, and expose this information to the general public, because there doesn't seem to be any avenues within our government, according to the laws on the books, or any investigations made by people who are sworn to investigate to do anything about this, or people who are unwilling to adjudicate these things in a courtroom with a judge or a prosecutor. So basically you've taken this to write books to try to expose this criminality outright to the general public. And you had mentioned that you said that you received one donation through all of this, and was that you? I'm not sure. I hope I'm remembering this right, because I do speak to a lot of authors of books. I want people to know who you are, sir. I really do. And if you would kindly just give everyone your website information and how to go about purchasing your books, I think that would be a great thing to do, because the information that you provide in here is absolutely critical. I really believe that it is absolutely critical for the United States citizens in this country to understand the deep-rooted corruption that has taken over our entire country from the ground right up in through the White House, right from the top all the way down to the bottom. And you have witnessed some horrific types of things where people have hundreds, maybe thousands of people have lost their lives to this corruption. All the chicanery in our government and what have you. So please tell everyone who's on the call where they can actually purchase your books, and I'd like them to become more knowledgeable with you. I'm also wondering one other thing before that. Are you still in contact with a lot of these people who are in the know of all these types of criminal activity?
A number of them, yes. Like, of course, with this latest deal with Gregory Scarpa and the what's going on in the New York area, I'm in constant contact with them. I've received hundreds and hundreds of pages of either documents or letters with specific information in it. So,
certainly would like, if we could even talk about it off the call, but I would certainly like to get together with other members of these individuals and put them on our show too. I don't want to stop until we really start exposing crimes. These people have made a lot of people in my group's targets, including myself. We have witnessed some terrible things of crime against humanity, some horrible things that have happened to us in our lives because of that. So we are victims already. And, you know, we have no choice but to expose the criminality that's taking place in our situation. And this transcends across our issues into just about every nook and cranny of our government and in our, you know, other people's lives as well. So any people that would be interested in exposing these crimes here on Freedom Fighters for America Radio, I'd be more than happy to speak to them and, you know, whatever we can do. Freedom Fighters for America is an organization looking to expose criminality. That's what we want to do. That's what we will do. You know, we definitely want to protect the United States citizens in this country and get some kind of the United States of America back. Because from what I see, we don't have anything of the sort. I don't even recognize it anymore.
Okay, and to answer your question now, the best site to go to, though I have several, but the best one is DefraudingAmerica.com. Now, the books are listed there and a lot of information, but also if anybody goes to Amazon.com and put my name, Rodney Stich, S-T-I-C-H, in the book search engine, there's a list of 19 books that comes up. So there's a lot of material there, and this is information you'll never find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. You know, I don't know anyone who has become a central focus point for so many insiders that have critical information. I mean, it's fabulous. I couldn't pay to get into this position. These are people that heard about me, and they trust me, and they come to me with inside information. And there's so many other things involved that we haven't even started talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's what the CIA has pulled. It's almost unbelievable.
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, when we talk about the FBI or the CIA and their government programs and mind control programs and a lot of other types of corruption that they do, it's just horrifying the types of things that they do to American citizens and also people around the world. Did you happen to look at the scene after 9/11 when the planes hit the building? Did you happen to see Ground Zero at all, or what was your assessment of the planes that hit the building? I have noticed on the tapes that it looked like some type of beam or something came off the airplane before it actually hit the South Tower. Did you happen to see anything like that?
Okay,
you know,
now,
in any of the tapes?
Let's say I'm chuckling a little bit here. You know, in one of my books, it's Unfriendly Skies, 20th and 21st Century, and I think also in my other one, Blowback, 9/11, and Cover-Up, I address these conspiracy theories. And don't be offended if I don't agree with you there. But I go into details and I show how some of the conspiracy theories by people who have no knowledge of aviation or what have you, they come up with some pretty wild ones. Let's see, I can give you a few that I write about. Now, there's one theory by this woman talk show host, I forget her name, but she wanted me to be on a program once. But she, while we were both speakers in Los Angeles there a few years ago, she's of the 500 people there, there must have been 300 standing on the seats looking for the missile that she says is under the wing. So let's address a missile. You can't just put it up there with adhesive tape. You've got to do a fair amount of engineering work to get that missile stay there. And this is, of course, would be done with hundreds of people in the hangar, not aware of it. You've got hundreds of people surrounding the plane, the service people, the pilots who do the walk around, as if they so they would have to be blind not to see that.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
and So this is the type of stuff. Then, of course, then you got the theory about explosives on the building. Well, first of all, to put explosives on all those floors, you would need probably several 18-wheelers pulling up to the building. And then, of course, putting the explosives there, then you got the wires connecting them all. That would take probably several weeks. And, of course, you got all the people in the building. So that didn't make any sense. The reason the building came down, first of all, it was the only construction project in the world that didn't have internal girders. Every floor was supported just by some fittings on the outside. Never been done before. So once one floor collapses, when it collapses on the next floor, it exceeds the strength of those fittings, so it just pancakes down all the way. And so that knocks out the theory of the explosive. Then as far as the Pentagon is concerned, there's people that say, oh, it wasn't a plane. Well, hell, there's pictures of portions of the plane on the lawn. And you don't even have to go that far. Where is the plane? Are they parked up on a cloud somewhere? So this is the type of stuff you hear. So here I come on the air trying to give a professional, sensible discussion, and I got all this to confirm.
Well, you know, people are going to talk. They're always going to have their doubts of how things took place during 9/11.
Well, yeah, there's even people who believe in a God. Well, I figured if they believe that there's someone there, I can't change their belief.
You know, probably not. You know, unfortunately, there's so many people out there. Like, for example, we're out here trying to expose crime. You more so than me because you have more knowledge than I do, you know, in the vast way. But nevertheless, you find yourself when you try to expose criminality that people don't want to hear it. It sounds too negative. They don't want to get involved with it. But they don't understand that directly or indirectly, it will at one point or another affect their lives or someone that they know. And if they took more of an interest in our government and what takes place in our society, perhaps we would not have the problem that we have now. I mean, looking in hindsight at that.
I guess ignorance is bliss, and sometimes I wish I was in that state. Life was so simpler when I was stupid about everything that was going on. But then, you know, the one reason the public is so uninformed also, you got the media people that dumbs down the public. Look at the simplistic focus we have by television on some of the movie stars and other crud that goes on. We have the commercials that must be formed by people with pointed heads, and I feel insulted that they present that, and I've got to look at it. So I can, and of course with members of Congress keeping the lid on everything. Most people have no idea these things go on. But every now and then, somebody comes to me who became a victim. Now they realize, hey, there's something not right here, but it's too late for them. And look at the housing and financial frauds. I even have a book on that. And all of the crud that was going on. And look at all the people who are losing their jobs, losing their homes. Some people are committing suicide. This is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And it's tragic. And if the public was only more aware of it. But I don't totally blame the public, though I get angry about it. But it's the media and the members of Congress that dumbs them down.
Putting this into, wrapping this up into a whole and trying to get an overview of this, what do you think, what method, you know, or methods are going to take to turn this around? Do you think it's going to be the public awareness and the public pressure against the government to do something about this? Do you think it will be done from inside our government, or will it have to be done from the outside of our government, from the general public?
First of all, I can't. You've got to address the culture, the corrupt culture that's everywhere. Congress isn't going to do it because if you just look at all the letters I sent to them with specific information on the corruption and the consequences. They're not going to admit that. The FBI and DOJ is so corrupt. And the media keeps a lid on. And the public, they just aren't going to, unless all of these groups that are ranting and raving about government would finally focus on the heavy stuff where there's evidence of it and then go from there. What we need is a bunch of ombudsmen at every level, but of course we don't have that, so that's we can't look forward to that. So I'm not optimistic. Well, now if some TV program started, something like Falcon Crest or Dallas, and would focus on these things, and let's get the public aware. Now, if the public was made aware of this, but will someone like that ever show up? I don't know. I'm not optimistic.
Right.
So, you know, at the age of 85, I'm sorry, I don't give a damn anymore. Because
well,
I worked for 40 years. I've been through hell, and not a single person ever came to my aid. I'm trying to do it now more or less to help people like Richard Tosh and some others. And as far as the public, if that's what they want, let them have it.
Are you still in contact with Mr. Toss?
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Now he's already served 16 years in Dunamore.
Yes, and I forget how many more years he's got to go. I'm not sure. I think it was about a 50-year sentence. You know what they got him for?
What was the charge?
Well, first the FBI, to get him out of the office, they charged him with misusing, I guess, a government-issued credit card. He put $8 worth of gas in his private auto while he's conducting a FBI business. And that charge was 4 years earlier. So that was just to get him out of the office. And the FBI had in, I think it was Long Island, they had a athletic club that was a front for the FBI. And so they got the Nassau County prosecutor to charge him with improper conduct with some teenagers. And the parent, from what I understand, the parents of most of the teenagers, they had committed some type of minor both welfare or other violations where the prosecutor was going to go after them unless their kids cooperated. So anyhow, then the judge cooperated, just like the judge cooperated who dropped the murder charge against Avicii. Oh, we didn't even get into that yet. But anyhow, so the judge gives Tosh 50, I think it was 50 years for, even if he had done that, which I don't feel he did, 50 years. Look, you got all these Catholic priests not doing anything. Also, Tosh had adopted a Vietnamese orphan when Tosh was in Vietnam. And that boy lives in Baldwin, New York right now. And if Tosh was fooling around with kids, he would have fooled around with that orphan, and he certainly didn't fool around.
Yeah.
But this is standard. Like, I've got a fellow who was with U.S. Customs, who was reporting all of the drugs that were coming in that their supervisors were allowing to get by. So he leaves, and he has a website called customscorruption.com. So the Department of Justice gets a Mexican alien to file to give perjured testimony, and John Carmen, the ex-customs guy, he's in prison now. And that's only a few. We can go into many others that the Department of Justice is the most, it's far more dangerous and has inflicted far more harm and upon American people than any terrorist has ever pulled. And it's going to continue that way.
Can you give us a rundown of a few of the types of crimes that they've put on people? I think you've said quite
a few. Like in the drug business, it's easy to file false charges against innocent people, even widowers. They'll file false charges. They'll set them up. They got all of these informants that have to justify their keep, and also government agents. So it's easy. It's easy to set you or anybody else up let's say you have an automobile for sale. They send someone around and they show their interest, and they may casually mention that they get their money from drug business. That goes over your head. You don't pay any attention to that. So you accept the money. Aha! You're arrested right there. Your assets are seized. You end up in prison. And depending on how bad they purge your testimony is, you could go to prison for life. I know a number of people that I'm in communication with that have life in prison sentences that were set up.
So in other words, for example, Mr. Del Vecchio and Louis Eppolito, okay, they were committing murder, they were dealing drugs through the mob. They had police officers and they had the DOJ, members of these agencies that were literally feeding information, and they were working hand in hand. So there was a connection between the Department of Justice and the mob in this criminal activity. Do you know about how they went about communicating with each other? How they actually contacted each other? Was it obviously it wasn't done very directly?
Now, I'm not sure who are we referring to now, because those two police detectives, while I write about them, I don't have any direct contact with them, so my information there would be very limited.
Well, you had mentioned Del Vecchio, who is with the FBI, correct?
Oh, yes. He was supervisor.
Okay, he was with the FBI, and then there was Eppolito. Okay, he was an actor, by the way, for a while.
Yeah,
Was he an FBI agent also?
He was New York police detective.
Okay.
Now, incidentally, something about DiVizio that very few people know. DiVizio was given a gun and money by FBI agents years earlier and told to go down to Mississippi and use any means let me go back a little bit. The FBI gave Scarpa Sr. money and a pistol, and Scarpa and his common law wife, Linda Sciarro, they go down to Mississippi, and the FBI tells them who they feel knows where those two civil rights workers are buried, who were killed back in the civil rights days. Anyhow, Scarpa Sr. then puts a pistol in the mouth of the guy who owned the television store that you're about to get killed if you don't take us to the bodies. So that's how the bodies were found. Oh, incidentally, another thing, talking about Scarpa Jr., Scarpa Jr. not only had information, advanced information of the terrorist attacks, but after the Oklahoma City bombing, he found out where Nichols had buried a lot of the explosives. And that hasn't been given any publicity. But anyhow, then the FBI goes there and they find the explosives. So Scarpa was Jr. was helpful to the in a number of ways. But the FBI promised, because Scarpa Jr. was risking the lives of his family by acting as a mole inside the Al Qaeda cell, while you've got Al Qaeda guys all around New York, New Jersey. So anyhow, FBI said, "Look, we're going to commute your sentence when this is over. Well, they backed down on that. And talk about the murder trial. Oh, maybe we didn't get into that. In 2000, did I mention?
No.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't brought up the murder trial yet. No.
Oh, okay.
If you would, I'd appreciate that one. We can give people a fill-in about what actually occurred.
Well, 3 years, in 2003, I'm notifying, like I mentioned earlier, every member of the House Judiciary Committee about the murders perpetrated by DiVicio in New York. This is before it ever came out. And I told them I got the inside sources. Well, they didn't respond. Well, 3 years later, we have the Brooklyn District Attorney Haynes, I believe his name is. He finally files murder charges against DiVicio. And so among the witnesses would be against DiVicio would be Linda Shiro, who was a common law wife of Gregory Scarpa Sr. And she was present numerous times when DiVicio came to their home, and they're talking about the murders that need to be done. So anyhow, she testified, and then all of a sudden, an investigator who had taped Linda about 10 years earlier for a book where Linda didn't quite give them all the information. But one of the writers of the book, he was also getting a lot of his inside information from DiVicio. So he was kind of loyal to DiVicio. Anyhow, he comes forward and say, hey, I got information that says in the case she's lying. So here we have then the Brooklyn District Attorneys, without giving Linda a chance to testify about that, or to give Gregory Scarpa Jr. the right ability to testify, because he also was a damn good witness since it was his father who was committing the murders, the Brooklyn District Attorney suddenly dropped charges. And this is unprecedented. So someone put pressure on the Brooklyn District Attorney, and that could only be someone high in the Department of Justice. And then the judge on that, who surely knew, hey, there was funny business here, said, yeah, and a matter of fact, Linda should be maybe prosecuted for perjury. And before she even had a chance to testify about the so-called conflict. So then there was a special investigation, and the outside investigators gave Linda a clear bill of health saying her testimony was creditable, and that same, then there was, and this is something strange. The Brooklyn District Attorney, who dropped the charges against Gregory Scarpa Sr., and who refused to allow Gregory Scarpa Jr. to testify, he writes a letter attesting to the credibility of Gregory Scarpa Jr. So this is bizarre, because DiVicio has never been found innocent, so he can be retried at any time. But here we have the Brooklyn District Attorney, who now he has an official statement saying Linda is a credible witness, so what she was testifying about DiVicio was true. And here we have the Brooklyn District Attorney saying Gregory Scarpa Jr. is creditable, so he would be there to testify, but nobody's filing murder charges against DiVicio. So there's not only an obstruction of justice there by the Brooklyn District Attorney, which also I feel involves the judge in that matter, but it shows the power high in the federal government that can control what state prosecutors and state judges do. And I learned this years ago when they were after me at the state level. So you got to admit, this is something that would be, you can't make something like this. People wouldn't believe it. But I got all the facts there. Because a lot of documents have been given to me. That's why this is probably the most explosive, even though there's been bigger scandals than this, but this is probably the most explosive scandal that's currently in effect. If people would only focus on it, but I'm
well,
not...
Well, it's hard for the average person to focus on it when it's not maintained within the media. The media obviously is in a blackout state where it's not reporting any real media at this point. So it's not out there, and unfortunately a lot of people in the general public feel that the only thing that they see that is real is on the cable and on the regular TV set, when in fact the only real information out there is on the Internet or maybe some radio stations. But unfortunately that seems to be the only way to get true information or to read.
The only thing with the radio, you got guys like Rush Limbaugh, who lies through his teeth, yet he's got millions of listeners, which attest to utter stupidity of most of the American public. And then, of course, look at all the American public who was supportive of Bush. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the guy's a serial liar.
Yeah.
And just like before the invasion, anybody that had Internet access and knew where to look could see all the reliable information saying, look, these are all lies. But you still had majority of the American public supporting Bush. And when Bush says he gets his message from God, anybody that can't double up on laughing at that, you've got to be an idiot. And that's what especially evangelicals or the Christians are. No wonder I'm an agnostic.
I find it very interesting that, you know, a lot of the people that I speak to, are ex-military, some from World War II, some from Vietnam, and I find that, you know, people from this generation and era, okay, in our society have more of a patriotic feeling than a lot of people that I come across today, who are younger or, it just seems to be that way. I mean, I've spoken to people who are retired or forced out, FBI or CIA or what have you, and the people who are out there doing the right thing or who have done the right thing during the course of their job become targeted, and then they become the victims. And because they're a patriot, because they're an American, or because they uphold their oath. And I find it just so inconceivable that people like yourself and some of the other gentlemen out there, I gave you a couple of their, the lady and a gent who worked in the agencies also. I don't know if you've ever had time to contact them. But, you know, they have fallen prey to this type of activity when they went to, you know, their supervisors to report the criminality within their own agencies. And it's just absolutely horrifying to see what really goes on in the underbelly of this country that people have no clue about. They really don't. And if they do, it seems like they don't care.
They're illiterate about these things, and they don't care, as you say. I mean, they're so busy. I look at it as an extension of the pacifier they had in their mouth when they were 6 months old. Look, videos. They are obsessed with the videos, obsessed with the ball games. And they haven't got a clue as to what is going on, and they can care less. So, and, of course, since... their actions, like the blood of all the people that have been killed in Iraq, that's on the hands of those guys. Well, actually, you can say all of us are, though there's a lot of us that are protesting, but look at all the people that have been killed that we were a part of. Look, we invade Korea on a bunch of lies, and we can't let them have the communist form of government. Hell, it's the communists that are financially bailing us out at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah,
of course, we invade Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos on a bunch of lies, and also, we can't let them have that form of government. We invade Grenada, we invade Panama, Iraq. And then we subvert countries. I was in Iran in 1953 when the CIA started the revolution. course, I didn't realize it was a CIA operation because I was a naive airline pilot. I was flying Muslim pilgrims to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina. And in those days, everybody in the Middle East liked us. And of course, thanks to our things like the way we subverted the Iranian government, the one-sided support and the aiding and abetting we give to Israel, to where look at all those innocent people, even little babies were killed in the invasion of Gaza by Israel, and they could not do it without the money we give them and the military weapons that the United States gives them. So is there any wonder we are hated in the Middle East?
I'm very curious to know, when you were, did you actually war two? Did you fly for the Navy during wartime in Europe or in the Pacific theater?
I was a patrol plane commander in the Navy in the Pacific, so that's where I was most of the time. And then oddly enough, you know, after the war. Here, you know, during the war, we had the Japanese guy pilot shooting at us. Well, after the war, shortly after the war, I'm flying a plane, an airliner, with a red meatball on the tail, and my co-pilots are all Japanese pilots, and most of whom were former military pilots.
Uh-huh.
And
been shooting at you at one time or another, and you don't even know it.
Well, here I am. I'm a pilot for Japan Airlines. Matter of fact, I think my initial pilot's airline transport pilot, Japanese, is number 170, I believe. So I was one of the first pilots Japan Airlines had. So that's kind of strange the way he had a shooting at us one year, and a few years later I got him as my co-pilot.
Yeah, it's a fine way to say howdy, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah, most of them were friendly, but I remember one, he always looked like he didn't quite accept this arrangement.
Well, I'm sure you weren't allowing him to bring you anything during the course of a flight. I'm just curious. You know, he didn't bring you any coffee or anything like that.
Oh, the Japanese stewardess always brought food up. I remember on a morning flight, and I used to joke a lot with the Japanese flight attendants. They were kind of cute. Every morning, about 7 o'clock, I'm in the cockpit, and here the flight attendant comes up with the tray. On there, there's two fists with the eyes looking up at me. And I forget what else is on it. I look at the fist, I look at the flight attendant, I look at the fist, and I look back at the flight attendant, and she knows, not for me.
That's. I'm very curious. I want to take this up for a second. You obviously have been around a lot of propaganda. You saw what the enemy could say, how they would say it. Do you think that there's a lot of propaganda more now coming from this country, or did you see from the enemy during the course of World War II? How would you rate that?
Well, let's see. During World War II, I wasn't, I didn't hear any of the propaganda from the other side. So, and of course, I'm in the Navy at the time. I'm in the Pacific. And in those days, you know, the average military guy, he's not reading all of these, what's going on in the newspapers and all. And there wasn't too much, you know, the news was pretty well controlled anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say. Of course, after World War II, I mean, it was nothing but propaganda. Look, I learned both from my CIA sources and in numerous books that have been written, many media people are secretly on the payroll of the CIA, and not only the CIA, two or three years ago, there were some news articles about how many media people are on the payroll of different government agencies. So there's a lot of propaganda, and of course, we to support the invasion of Iraq, we get all these retired military men who are briefed by the Pentagon to give the Pentagon line, and of course, so the public gets the propaganda, and they don't realize it. And then you got these political pundits that are supporting the lies by President Bush, and so that's why the average person out there, unless you really read. Like, if all you listen to is Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly, or if you don't read numerous newspapers, I'm saying many. I get, like, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and many others. But if you just get the local paper, most local papers limit their coverage of something like the duck crossing the street or something. So
yeah.
You're not getting any of this heavy stuff. And this is why I wonder if the people away from the large cities, like in the Midwest, where they have mostly local newspapers that really don't have anything in there, if that's one of the reasons that they were so supportive of Bush. And then if they listen to Rush Limbaugh, I mean, they don't know, and they take that as true, and it's a pathetic situation that they're so illiterate, and they can be manipulated, and they are being manipulated. I'd be insulted if I was being manipulated like that.
So the avenues of communication are quite obviously have been stifled and blocked in a lot of instances. So people are not getting educated just due to the fact that the communication of true information happens to be extremely held back, putting it modestly. In order to get more information to more people, what avenues do you think at this particular point? I know that you write books. You've had over 3,000 radio and TV shows. Have these TV shows been on in the mainstream media?
Well, most of them had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember once. I'd appeared on many major television stations in the beginning there, but toward the end, when I started, this is when I was talking about the aviation. But as I got into the drug smuggling by the CIA and other things, then the major stations started avoiding me. And I remember, this is about 4 or 5 years ago, and it happened about 3 times. I'd get a call from a network station to appear in San Francisco the next morning for an uplink. Well, in every case, before the end of that day, I was suddenly canceled. So the word is out locally in the San Francisco area, don't have this guy on. They were quite different when I was just talking about aviation. But now you get in. What I was talking about was not only the CIA. I'm talking about the corrupt judges, both federal and local. And they'll go only so far. Once you get beyond a certain point, nobody, none of the media will allow it to go beyond that point.
When you were talking about the drug smuggling, you're talking about corruption, obviously, because it is involved in drug smuggling. They have to protect the smugglers, and they have to protect its sources and to where it goes to. So when you were actually, discussing these matters, were you also referring to enforcement individuals, locally, state, or federal?
Oh, it would be local, state, and federal, yes. And my sources were, let's say, like local prosecutors, like in Texas. I have a lot of information in my Drugging America book from this Texas investigator who gave me a lot of grand jury testimony concerning drug smuggling involving the Texas National Guard. And then I've got like former DEA personnel who told me about the drug smuggling, including one who was smuggling the drugs himself. And then I'm going to talk to the drug smugglers who go into great detail about how, where they picked it up, the people they were in contact with, where they landed, like I mentioned earlier, at military bases. So the military was aware of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
a lot of times
when it was coming in from other countries, when
it was being imported,
most of this was import we're talking about now, right? Obviously.
Oh, yeah, smuggling. And then, last few years, I got this one fellow who gave me considerable information about an FBI agent by the name of Terry Nelson, and this guy gave me the details how the drugs were flown in twin-engine corporate aircraft up along the Atlantic coast, and the drugs would be dumped into the ocean off of Nova Scotia, and the drugs would be picked up. And this involves the FBI agent Nelson, who out of the Miami office. And then the drugs would be taken inland and then flown over the border into Montana, oftentimes landing at Indian reservations and things like that. And then one of my sources was the head of a secret CIA airline, and he gave me a lot of information about how his airline was started by the CIA and funded by the CIA, how he the details of the drugs he picked up, some of the airlines that he then that picked up the drugs from him, and he's talking about Southern Air. It's been so long ago, I gotta think. Evergreen was one of them, and then the other one, Southern Air Transport, I believe. And matter of fact, I even listened in on some telephone conversations between him and the head people at Evergreen and Southern Air Transport, and they obviously knew each other. And one of the things this one guy tells me, and goes into great details about how, as a flying for the CIA, he flies C-130s and hauls military weapons to the IRA in Ireland. And once I was listening in on a telephone conversation between him and the head of the IRA, and it was interesting. And when it was over, he asked me, "Hey, what do you think about it?" And I said, "You know, he is a brogue to where I didn't understand a damn word he said." And then I got this one fellow who's the head of I even wrote a book about him. He was the head of a secret CIA operation based in Honolulu that took over from the Nugent Hand Bank in Australia. And he gave me a lot of information. He turned over several boxes of CIA documents to me.
And, really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. And in one of the boxes, I found an envelope that had handwritten notes on six different bank accounts. They were secret bank accounts for some well-known people. And he had the code names where their bank accounts were funded then by this CIA operation. And two of the names you would, of course, recognize. And one was George H.W. Bush. Now, this happened during the 1980s now. And the other fellow was Armitage. And, of course, Armitage was in the George W. Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is straight poop. These guys aren't bragging or anything. They're just I've been friends with them for years, and they tell me just as a matter of fact, hey, this is what happened. And they don't they want to forget about it. Most of these guys won't appear on a radio show. They want to forget about it.
Well, I know people that would certainly love to have those documents to prosecute but you know that.
Well, the documents or the information is in my books there. That's why each of the different books have a focus on different areas. No matter how much money you have, you couldn't go to any college that would have even half of this information.
So, in other words, this is like a snowball that kept rolling down a mountain and getting bigger and bigger as you got along.
If someone had out of the blue told me all of this, I figured, hell, this guy is loco. But I started learning about it gradually, starting as a federal agent myself. Now, prior to that, I was as dumb about these things as most of the American public is. And I probably thought, well, the FBI, DOJ, they wouldn't do anything like this, like involved in murders and of U.S. citizens. And so gradually the stuff comes to me. And I, like one of my CIA sources, I must have 200 to 300 audio tapes of information he gave me over the years. And this is like deposition-like questioning, where I'm asking them specific questions, like on October Surprise. Where was the meeting? How did the military equipment get stolen out of National Guard armories and get to Iran? And things like this. Who was there? And I could ask him the same question 2 years later. I get the same answer without hesitation. And we're talking about a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what did... Now, I'm sure your sources who, you know, give you documentation, give statements or what have you, a lot of them probably have different motivations for doing that, I would imagine. Is that so?
Well, none of them are looking for anything for themselves. I mean, there's no money in it, and mm-hmm. they certainly don't want any more publicity. I mean,
Do you think that it could protect their lives if some of this evidence was not only hidden by them? Do you think that would have made them safer to spread the information around a little bit, so in case something did happen to them, there may be a link back to the source of the, you know, the problem?
That's it. I know at least two of them. They don't want to say anything. They don't want any publicity because they'll probably end up back in the pokey. So, most of them, they just want to get it off their chest. Just like me, for instance. I mean, I write these books. I don't make any money on the books. Initially, as I told you earlier, I had $10 million in assets, and it took money to form a publishing company because no publisher would take them. So I had to form my own publishing company, and I had a twin-engine plane. I'm flying all over the country, appearing on TV. Well, my expenses far exceeded what the total book sales were, even though I sold tens of thousands of books over the period of years. But I never broke even. I never intended to break even. Oh, it would have been nice, but that wasn't my goal. It was the stupid idea I had that the public wanted to know, and that they would come running to the rescue. I used to believe in Santa Claus at one time, so you'll have to excuse me.
You know, I do believe that timing is everything, though. And I think your books are extremely explicit. It's a tell-all type of thing. I think that when the time comes that this country starts to understand and the people start to understand the real underbelly, that your books will probably be more in demand, than they were when you made them. I get that specific feeling that people are going to want to start to know why things are happening so badly in this country. And I really appreciate you writing these books. I have not read all of them. I have read a couple of them. And I want to tell you right now that I intend on buying all of them and reading them because they are very, very interesting books. They really are. You can gain a lot of information and knowledge by reading the information you have to share.
People can even download them, and the downloaded books are getting more popular all the time. And it only costs $12 to download. Let's say, and these books are between 500 and 700 pages, and these are tight pages, so there's a lot of material in there. But I'm not optimistic like you are. Now, I'm 85 years of age, and I'm not going to be here much longer. And
I hope you'll be here to 100 at least.
I don't think so, but nevertheless, it's been very discouraging. People have no idea what they did to me, and it's been very, very difficult. But I see, and I feel so sorry for what's happening to people today that are losing their homes, their jobs, where families are living in their car, no income. And, I mean, it's tragic. And yet there's no demand to go after the no good so-and-so is responsible for that. And that's including members of Congress who helped make this possible. Those
right.
same members of Congress now are out there outraged at, and claiming other people are responsible. But nobody's really going after these crooks.
This
so,
is the corruption that is putting people in the street. This is the corruption that railroads people into jails and into mental institutions. This is a type of corruption that has infiltrated our entire society and globally as well. And I have one more question. I'm just wondering, was there more, with most of the drugs that are being brought in by the CIA, were they coming in at the time that you recall? Were they coming from South America, or were they coming more from another area? I'm sure they were coming from quite a few, but did you notice them coming from more than one area? One in particular?
The sources I had, most of them, not all, most of them were coming in through the Caribbean that way and into Texas, into Florida, different places along the Gulf Coast. And then I also have sources, though, that brought them in from the Far East. And, of course, a number of people I talked to mentioned about how some of the drugs were hidden in the body cavities of dead GIs, which is, do something like that to the body of someone dead is horrible. But got to be realistic. Well, look at all the murders. Mexico has had, the reports I read, last year over 6,000 murders due to the drug smuggling. Now, the people who are funding that are the American drug smuggler, drug users. So when you've got all these drug users in the United States knowing that people are being murdered to get their money, the money that they're spending for drugs, how are you going to expect those drug users to be of any have any concern whatsoever for the welfare of the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I don't think that a drug user would be concerned about anything but the drugs. And of course, the people who are doing the smuggling and the people who are protecting those smugglers are the ones that are really making out. Especially to these private prison companies and what have you, where they actually want these drugs to be present because it adds to a lot of revenue to these prisons. It adds revenue to the court system. It adds revenue to the law enforcement people who are out there doing this thing, the prosecutors. Everyone is making money except the victims. And it seems to be the citizens in this country.
Hey, I've said the similar things in my book, Drugging America. Everybody makes money, and the public is like a feeding trough. So you got the prosecutors making out by putting people in prison. You got, as you say, we got the prison guards and the prison builders making money, putting them in prison. It's endless. And then, of course, you got the lawyers. They all are making out like bandits. And the poor, innocent, sheep-like public, they don't even know they're being screwed.
Well, can I ask you a question? Now, you flew as a captain. You flew for Northwest Airlines and you flew for Japan Air?
I flew in those days. You know, we would get laid off frequently due to business slowing down of business. So I've probably been about with six or seven different airlines over the years. And every time you go with another airline, you get a flight check. But I got checked out in virtually every plane flown since World War II, and that's DC-3, DC-4, Super Constellation, Boeing Stratocruisers, DC-8, C-46, Martin 202, Convair 880 also. So I've really been true. I was, I look back, I was 20 years old when I was a flight instructor in the Navy, teaching pilots advanced flying in the PBY Catalina flying boats. I was 21 when I was a patrol plane commander in the most advanced four-engine aircraft. So I was just in the right place at the right time. So joining the Navy was the best thing I ever did. And I used to live in New Jersey, and I joined the Navy a year before Pearl Harbor. Talk about Pearl Harbor. The same stupidity we have today existed then. Here we have a Japanese fleet, hundreds of planes coming from the northwest. We saw them on radar, and we didn't even react. This is the stupid culture we have. I'm sorry, in the United States. I don't mean to be critical, but unless we address our weaknesses, we're never going to correct them. And we sure are a bunch of dopes in many areas.
Well, I think we should definitely try to correct some of these issues. I'm going to be 51. I'll tell you something right now. I am so angry with what's taking place within our society and government because of this criminality and because of what happens to certain members of myself and our group that we're in, that I've gone on this thing. Maybe I'm like Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith goes to Washington and, the best causes are the lost causes or what have you. But I hope that sooner or later, that gentlemen like you who have provided this type of information and evidence and other individuals are going to one day get their day. Okay, like they say, every dog has its day. Maybe we'll get our day because the information is out there. It's all over the websites. It's all in people's heads, and it's not thing in people's heads that spins around going cuckoo, cuckoo. This is actual factual information. And it's really about time that this country saves itself before it's too late by exposing some of these very, very high-end criminals that are literally murdering people all over this globe and especially in this country. Really, absolutely. We have such a bring down in our country right now with the corruption, and it seeps from the executive branch of government right down to the guy who walks the line on. Can I ask you a question? Now, you flew for the airlines. Have you been a union member? Were you part of any of these unions, the aviation union or the federal union, when you were a federal officer working as a safety inspector?
Well, let's see. We had a union with several of the airlines. I was with Flying Tigers also. Matter of fact, I set up by myself the pilot flight operating procedures for the stretch DC-8. This is after I left the FAA, they hired me for that. But, pilots, most of them, you got some really good ones, but most of them, hell, they don't, especially at United Airlines, they were real. There was a really serious problem there. And, and the pilots knew about. They weren't given a training. The records were being falsified, and pilots needing corrective training were denied the training, and they were happy with it. I remember there were, I think it was 42 people were cremated alive in a United Airlines crash at Salt Lake City, and the National Transportation Safety Board listed three primary reasons for that. One, the captain's high sink rate, which caused the crash. Two, the flight engineer's poor performance after the crash. And three, the crew, poor evacuation of the passengers. Well, now, here's what I had written, made reports prior to that crash. I had reported that very same pilot as having a dangerous high sink rate, and he should have had immediate corrective training. That was not done. Matter of fact, I was removed from the program for being critical. Two, I had repeatedly reported in writing, and I had one report was a six-page, single-space report on the poor training and lack of qualification of the flight engineers at that airline. Three, I had two reports that the airline was falsifying their emergency evacuation training, that instead of doing it every year, they were only doing it every 3 years, and then falsifying it, which is a criminal offense. Now, the National Transportation Safety Board knew all this, but when they made their report, they covered up for it. They identified that the direct cause of the crash, but they left out all the problems in the FAA. Now, that's only one crash. There were many others where they covered up, and I describe it in my book. So this is why the public, they hear about a report, an accident report by the NTSB, and they assume it's correct, just like the report on TWA Flight 800, where they cover up for that. Even American Airlines Flight 587 that crashed right near Coney Island there after 9/11. Heck, and I describe that in my book, there's numerous witnesses that saw explosions at the rear of the plane. These witnesses were retired firemen, retired policemen, who don't imagine things. Mm-hmm. And yet, the National Transportation Safety Board said, oh, the tail ripped off. That's why it crashed. Well, planes don't need the tail that badly. There's been, I remember there was a B-52 military plane where the whole rudder assembly ripped off, but that doesn't cause the plane to crash. It gives you a little more, you have to work a little harder to maintain it. But just like TWA Flight 800, the NTSB says, oh, there was a spark in the center fuel tank. 10 years later, they still have not made any changes to that because nobody believes that that was the problem.
Yeah.
And, of course, the NTSB refused to... they blocked the testimony of the people who saw the missiles, including that one military pilot who saw the military explosion before the gasoline explosion. And the people don't realize that. And they're so naive. And this is why they got to read books like this. But how many people read? And the few people who do read, I mean, Harry Potter, let's face it, or fiction, they got to read these nonfiction books by insiders, but there's probably a fraction of 1% of the few people who read, and there's only about 15% of the public that reads any books. So how do you expect the public to know? They're happy in their state of bliss, and I wish I was there myself.
Wait, can I ask you something? What do you think? Now, the flight in 800 intrigues me in two aspects. Number one, there was a gentleman, I forgot his name, he went into the hangar out in Suffolk and took a seat or took some sampling off the seat of that, one of the seats that was downed in that aircraft. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yeah, I write about that a little bit. And so the FBI charges him with a criminal offense. And, you know, see, this is what happens when you try to expose the truth, they come after you. So here we got the raw power of the Department of Justice and all these people, and they come after you. And, of course, the media, hell, they don't give a damn. They're protective. And the members of Congress don't give a hell, they're protective. So the guy's out there all by himself. And
right.
Even the public who knows, you know, I started getting on radio shows in 1978, and sometimes, like after like one crash, PSA crash in San Diego, I'd be on 7 or 8 shows a day for maybe 2 weeks straight. And here, people are hearing me, and remember, I'm an insider, hearing me talk about how a plane crash in which they lost family members, they're hearing this from me.
Yeah.
And they don't do anything. All they do, they rush to the attorney's office. Hey, let's get a buck out of this.
Yeah.
And the same thing with 9/11. All this information I have. But yeah, hell, it's much easier to go and sue the airlines and get some money. And they just don't give a damn about getting to the truth. Because a lot of the family members of 9/11, they know about me and what I've written, but they just don't give a damn.
No one gets angry. You know, I still have very vivid pictures of that flight blowing up, 300 people dying in that plane. You know, I saw the funeral. I mean, it was horrendous, and I'm sure you've seen plenty more. And it's just terrible, unconscionable to think of all the people that suffered a loss because that plane was literally blown out of the sky. Blown out of the sky either by the Navy because they had suggested that there were naval operations in that area, or it was done out of a laboratory out in Shirley, Long Island, because they were working on a directed energy weapon out there at that specific time, too. So I find it horrendous, absolutely horrendous, unconscionable, that this that people can get away with covering this up. And, you know, I remember the first newscast when that plane blew up. And the first thing that was said was they're checking to see if it was a terrorist attack, that people were seen in the area, and that they did claim that they saw missiles go up and hit that airliner. So, you know, it's really funny that when these instances take place, the media doesn't scramble fast enough, and sometimes it sneaks its way through. You know what I'm saying? And in that specific case, it did. In the first broadcast, if you recall, the first broadcast of Flight 800 downing, they actually said what was going on. And then once the NTSB and the FBI arrived to the scene, that was the end. That was the end. All of a sudden, the whole thing changed.
And remember, another aspect to TWA 800, it was Ramzi Youssef that tells Gregory Scarpa Jr., a mole in that organization, that there's shortly going to be the downing of an airliner. So, and then, of course, one of the FBI officials that were involved in the cover-up was this gal. I forget her name again. It's in my book. But that's the gal that was also on the 9/11 commission conducting those hearings. Now, matter of fact, she helped cover up for these things.
So isn't it interesting? Interesting how the same actors or players, shall we call them, wind up to be time after time in quite a few instances of covering up the corruption because of their occupation, or I'm looking for another word here, because of where they're situated in their jobs, that they have that capability of doing so. And I find that very interesting that they cover up the mob like that, and how Ramzi Youssef, okay, a terrorist, a plotter, that could be able to predict this information without knowing in advance and having the discussion with a member of organized crime. These are red flags and bells that are going off like no tomorrow.
I mean, imagine if the public was suddenly given this information and it explained to them the significance of it. I mean, what it would do to the United States. It could start in motion an investigation and education of the public that's never occurred before.
Have you ever sat down and figured out the number of people that were murdered because of this corruption? I'm looking at this thing. Now, you know, for impact's sake, okay, for impact public awareness sake, we're talking over 3,000 lives during 9/11. Okay, now, I have a different idea about what happened during 9/11, but, you know, you're the expert who knows about these scenes. But I'm looking at Flight 800, over 300 people. I'm looking at 9/11, 3,000 people. And the list goes on and on and on. I mean, what's the body count here? What is the body count, do you think, in 10 years, one decade, how many people are murdered because of this corruption and cover-up?
Now, also remember what Ramzi Youssef was telling Gregory Scarpa Jr. was one, the downing of a plane, which TWA happened right after that. It was telling Scarpa about the planned bombings of U.S. embassies in Africa, which happened in Kenya and Tanzania, and also then the hijacking. So there's about 4,000 people there in those terrorist attacks that here we had a mole inside the Al-Qaeda organization giving this information to the FBI, and I've got the report, the FBI reports that Scarpa provided me with that shows what was being stated, and here where they cover up for this to protect some key FBI people, and 4,000 people died initially. And of course, then the success of 9/11 then was used as the excuse to invade Iraq. So we not only have lost close to 4,000 GIs, but an estimated close to 1 million Iraqis have been killed. And just think, if the corruption in the FBI, I mean, in the FAA did not exist, those terrorists would never have succeeded in hijacking the planes. If only people could realize this.
So we're saying here that this corruption, this criminal behavior and activity has cost well over 1 million lives. And not one person has come forward, nothing gets done, and there is no prosecution, there's nothing. And these people are just literally systematically murdered. Some of it's engineered by members of our government, some by the mob, and it is really a horrific show. And I think that the people in America really need to wake up. And I thank you, sir. You've been a great, great author with these books. I really, really appreciate every single one of them. I'm definitely going to promote them as far as I can. I am putting every book on the website. We put you up on the Honest Hero, sir, because you were out there risking your lives to help your fellow citizens in this country. So
okay.
I do find that
it's been a pleasure.
It's really very important that I wish there were, 1,000 more people like you, sir, because quite honestly, that this country is in a very, very big mess. And I don't know, aside from people like yourselves, who've worked in these agencies, I think that it will take a lot of people such as yourself who have the credibility, who've been on the inside, who have this inside information, to pull it together and to really shake things up. And I really think that people who've worked for the CIA who are willing to come forward with information, the FBI, or any other agency or any other witness to these horrible crimes should come forward, and I know what capabilities and the possibilities of that something terrible happening to them. But if there was something put into place, a real witness protection program for people who could come forward and give actual information, and a real investigation and real prosecutions, this country would turn around. I really believe that. I really do. And unfortunately, we don't have that right now. But we're certainly going to push for that. I know there are people out there that are trying, some more than others, but we really, really hope that happens. And I want to thank you very much, and I hope I hope you'll be a guest again on our show. You're very, very interesting.
Okay.
I really do appreciate you coming on to the show. We're almost out of time. We have a couple of minutes left. Do you think you could take a couple of questions from anybody? Is that a possibility?
I can understand them.
Okay. Does anybody out there have any questions that they want to ask Mr. Stitch? Okay, hold on. I'm going to unmute the phones now. Does anybody have any questions that they'd like to ask Mr. Stitch? Now's the time. Okay, well, there doesn't seem to be any questions. We have quite a few.
I got a question. Hello?
Yes, who's that?
This is Fred. Mr. Stitch, with the federal agents, I know there are federal agents that mean well, Is it just that, like in New York City, I believe some of the police do COINTELPRO, or there is co-opted officials. How do they stomach the fact that their blindness to what they find, their investigators, like they have, pyrotech investigators, and they're blind to the fact of the research available in alternate publications. Are they that undiscernible in their reading to not know what's happening?
Oh, let's see. I'm not sure how to answer that. The thing is, the public, look at all the lies that Bush and his shills were giving the people over the years. Anybody, they've got to assume that the people are really uninformed or dumb, whatever your word you want to say. And the people just don't know. It's hard for some of us who are close to this to think that people are that ignorant, but they are, and that's why they get away with it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to stop the call now because we're about out of time, but we can still stay on the call. But I want to thank you very much, Mr. Stitch, for your interview this evening. You've been quite informative. I really, really hope to be talking to you again real soon. And if you'd like to stay on and answer some more questions, that would be terrific. But I do have to stop the recording on this call. So this is Freedom Fighters for America signing off right now with Mr. Rodney Stitch, a man dedicated to exposing crime, and so are we. Thank you, and have a good night, folks.